Session number 25935.
Miss John Hall, Rail 1. Could you tell me when and where you were born, Mr. Hall?
Yes, I was born in the 28th of April 1923 in Europa Point in Gibraltar.
And could you tell us a bit about your background, what your family were doing in Gibraltar?
Well, my father was in the army. I think he was a sergeant then, when I was born. And my mother came from the Isle of Wight, and she went out to join him. While we were in Gibraltar, I had a brother born and a sister. I can only remember the most I can remember about Gibraltar really is probably living in the married quarters and spending most of my time down on the rocks on the front of Gibraltar. And when I was asked for what I was doing down there, I was informed that I informed them that I was waiting for my ship to come in, which is the only thing I can remember much about Gibraltar.
How old when did you leave?
I left Gibraltar when I was just before I was five, and came to live in Netley, married quarters just outside Southampton. At that time, my father was ill. He had appendicitis and died with peritonitis, and we had to come over to the only place we could go then was my mother brought us over here to her mother, which is in Blackbridge Road in Freshwater Bay. We came there. My mother was at that time was still pregnant with my youngest sister, hadn't been born then. Now school. I went to school in the local school at it's now the middle school. I think it was, I can't remember what it was called then. It was just the North School as I remember then. That was the big school. It's now the middle school. So I can't remember what the name of the school was then. But that's the one we all went to. And we all used to walk from Blackbridge Road to that school. It was about, what, 3/4 mile to a mile, I suppose. Winter, summer, just walk there.
And what kind of an education, what did you, how did you do it?
Basically, not very well, I don't think. Well, I left school at 14.
So would you be just a standard
education, really. There was 11 plus, I think, at that time. I sort of did that, but there was no academic career come out of that, I don't think. It was just
no
a normal school.
No particular favourite subject or least?
Not at that time, I don't think, no. I left school at 14. And went to work in, well, went as errand boy in several places until I was nearly 15.
Now, what life like as an errand boy? What was the work like?
Just riding around on a bike, really, going right out into the country. I worked for a place called Wolf and Gears First, which was the stationery, which is now Thornton's. So I just sort of delivered papers in the morning. Most mornings, and just fiddled around, I think, most of the day. Then I worked for a chemist at the top of Gate Lane, and used to deliver medicines and things to all people that couldn't get to the place there. But by that time I was deciding what I wanted to do with myself, really. I was towards about 14 and a half. Then I decided I want to join the Navy. The Navy at that time for me seemed a good prospect. There was nothing to do round here. There was no work as such. Basically, as it is now, there's not a lot to do for youngsters now, I don't think. So I went over to Southampton, passed the medical.
That would be about 1937?
1938. Well, 1937, probably the end of 1937 when I went over there to pass my medical.
Do you remember any of the sort of tests you had?
There was the normal sort of educational test, reading, writing and a bit of arithmetic, I think, and that sort of thing. The medical was pretty stiff.
Tell me about that.
Well, at that time I had a broken arm which was, you know, bent a little bit. So the exercising and that was a bit dodgy. I can't remember much about the exam. For now, I can't remember all about it. I hadn't thought about it for very long. Anyway, apparently I passed the medical, and passed the other exam, the eye tests and things like that. I came home, and then in 1938, they sent for me to go to St Vincent. That was in May, 1948.
And now this is HMS St Vincent Shore Station.
Shore Station, but it was only boys' training.
And that's at Gosport.
That was at Gosport.
And what were your first impressions? You know, you arrive as a young lad, still 14 and a half or so, 15.
Quite exciting, as I remember. A bit apprehensive at leaving home, and only young. But then, there again, everybody I met was young anyway. They were all at my age, 15. We settled in there, and the first thing I can remember is sort of getting dressed out in uniform.
Well, tell me about the kitting out. What uniform and kit did they give you?
Well, the kit we wore normally all day was a sort of a canvas, what we called a duck suit, which is canvas trousers, the normal jacket that sailors wore, you know, the everything went over your head by your trousers, sort of thing. Gaiters, boots, belt. And a cap, plus all the other equipment we had. We had to get everything from socks. We were kitted out from socks, shoes, right up to the headgear of all the different dresses that we were going to wear. Sort of number ones, which we wore ashore, which was our best uniform. Number twos, which we wore in the evening, and when we were loafing around, not doing any instructions, and then the duck suits, which we always wore at drill and instructions all through the day. We'd get up about 6:30 in the morning.
Well, that was good. That's good. You start. Can you tell us what your accommodation was like? You know, were you in huts or what were you in?
No, we were in brick buildings, two story high. There was a lower store, you know, a lower dorm. They were like big dorms, big dormitories. They would hold a complete class. Each dorm was its own class. So there would be about 30, I suppose.
And what were they like?
The beds. They were all single beds. And they were all lined up each side of the room. And the floors of the deck were highly polished. In fact, we had to take our shoes off when we went in. And every morning we would get up and we would have to get on our hands and knees with cloths and go backwards doing the... One putting the polish on, others putting take the polish off, and that would be our routine every morning.
And what about the stove? Was there a stove or any heating?
I can't remember much of it. No, there was no stoves. There's no stoves that I remember.
And where did you put your kit?
I think it was hot water heating. We had pipes of hot water gear. Our kit was all stowed in lockers. And once a week we used to have to bring all our kit out and lay it on the floor alongside our bed, and it would all be on a, we'd lay it on our on the floor, and it had to be rolled up. Every piece had to be rolled up with what we called strops around it, which was sort of string around it, and it all had to be measured from the outside to the inside about 2 inches, and it all had to be in line right the way down. Every bit had to be in line. And the first job we had was to sew our name on every bit of kit we had, and we had to sew it with cable stitch. And I used to laugh at the poor little devils that had long names that had to sew. Our socks and all, everything had to be sewn with this in red.
So you mean names like Higginbottom opposed to Hall?
Yeah, yes. I used to think, sorry for those poor lads, because it must have taken them weeks to sew their names on, because nobody could sew at that time, I don't think, at least I couldn't. But we all had to do this, and they all had to be sort of regular all the way down. So every week we had to do this with all our kit.
What were the kit inspections like? How strict were they?
Very strict. Being in a boys' service, they were really very strict. Our punishment, if we anything was wrong, was either we'd do extra drill at night, sort of arms, what we called jankers, or stoppage of leave if we weren't allowed ashore.
Now, the best way of looking at training at these places is to look at a typical day, and it picks up a lot of the points. So you'd started, but I interrupted you. How would the day start?
A typical day would start at 6:30. We'd get up and wash. We'd do clean our dormitory out, and then we'd have to go round to another, like an office or a hole in the wall, where we would get our cocoa and hardships biscuit. That was the first thing we had. Then we'd go back and do some more cleaning, what we called clean ship, which was just normal domestic duties, I suppose, like cleaning up and squaring things away, putting all our stuff away, and then getting ready for our first, for the first parade, which would be, I suppose, in the winter when it was just getting daylight, it'd be about 8 o'clock by then. We would all the whole barracks or the whole station would go out onto the drill ground, the drill ground, and there would be colours, of course, hoisting the ensign in the morning. Each division would be inspected. We'd all form up all around the parade ground. And
so this was a division's parade.
This was a division parade. Every morning, we were inspected thoroughly by each officer, our own divisional officers. And then there would be a march past, going past the captain. And then each one would go what we call over the mast. We'd have to go over the mast, we'd go up it, along the devil's elbow, which they call, which you're hanging like this in space underneath.
You weren't allowed to go through the lubber's hole?
No, we had to go under that and then over onto the platform, and then up the Jacob's ladder going up to the top, down the other side, get our fingers trod on and whatever, and come down and back down and fall in again, and then we'd go round to our classes. The classes would consist of...
Now, hang on, the master, how did you feel about it? Because some lads don't like heights. I mean, how are you with it?
I can't ever seem to be bothered with it. In fact, I used to spend a lot of time up the mast. My mother used to send me homemade cakes and things, and I remember that I never used to want to share them with anybody. So I used to eat most of them up the mast, for some silly reason, to get out of the way. There were a few accidents. A couple of sailors or boys I remember falling down from the devil's elbow, but there were netting, there were nets underneath, but they sort of broke their leg, or not too much damage really.
So after the mastrel, division's pride and mastrel.
Yeah, after that then we'd go to classes.
And what would the classes be?
The classes would either be going to gunnery. You would have gunnery lessons. You'd have seamanship lessons, which were out in boats, whether sailing in Portsmouth Harbour or pulling boats.
Well, let's do seamanship first, because it fits. Tell us all the seamanship you learned. So the first thing was boat cutters. Cutters,
yes, and whalers for sailing. Cutters for sailing. We used to learn how to hoist them up and down on the davits.
What was it like sailing?
Seamanship. Sailing was about... I enjoyed sailing. In fact, I sailed... It was a thing that I took to. I still like to do it now. Sailing was a thing I took a great pride in, sailing and pulling. Because eventually I was in pulling crews that won cups and things, but that's later on in life.
Had you any skills in it before? I know you were.
No, the only seamanship I had, of course, was looking at the sea down here. There was no.
Because they have a lot of boats in the harbour here.
Yeah, I used to go out in boats. I used to, as a kid, I was always out. We had rowing boats and canoes here then, the wooden canoes, and we used to go out in those in the summer. Always take them out in the summer. I remember we used to take them out just before the season started, because they used to leak a little bit, and taking them out in the water actually sort of swallowed the wood, and we'd close any holes that were in them. So seamanship was a thing. I like the sea. I sort of spent my life around the sea, I think.
But you actually learnt the techniques
of sailing,
and
pulling. Yes, we had to learn, and we had little chiefs that sat in, used to sit in the back and with a whip and make us to. Oh, yeah, they used to do that sort of thing. Whether they used to hurt anybody, whether or not, I don't know. But they used to sit there and be real, you know, get on, pull, smoke, all this sort of business.
Did you find it tough, pulling? I mean, as opposed to rowing sort of for a bit of rest?
Yes, it was. It was hard work because the cutter is a big boat, and our little boys used to only just about be able to look over the gunwale with these damn great oars. And there were, what did a cutter crew had? 12. There were 6 either side and a coxswain. Now on the whalers there were only 5 in the crew, so they were a bit easier to manage. But the whalers were big things. With, as I said, we each had one oar either side, so it was, you know, pulling either side.
And with the actual sailing, were you learning to tack?
Yes, all the sailing, yes. We had to learn, of course, before we went sailing, we had to learn the parts of a boat, the parts of a sail, what we did, how to reef and all that, so we went the whole through the lot.
What about knots?
Capsizing and everything else.
What about knots and splices? Tell me about that.
That was coming, that would be another lesson in seamanship. There were knots and splices. There was all the anchors and cable work.
Now tell me about, why were knots and splices so, because I mean landlubbers like myself don't sometimes understand why I had to learn so many knots,
that's what we used to do. I mean, today's Navy don't splice anymore. I think they're going back to it now, but that's another story. Because they were using, at that time we were using man-made vegetable fibre ropes. So they could all be spliced.
Start with knots. Did each knot have a set purpose?
Each knot had a set purpose. And the reason they had a set purpose, and the reason we tied these knots, because as you know, if rope gets wet, and remember we're going at sea, so everything that contains a rope is going to get wet. If a rope gets wet, it swells. Now what happens to a knot if you put it in and you can't undo it? So it'd be forever more chopping lumps of rope off, which we can't afford to do. A rope is I learnt that a rope was, we had to learn the size of ropes, the diameter of ropes, the strength of ropes, how long the ropes were, where they were made, what they were made of. And there were 4. There were sisal, hemp, manila and coir ropes. That's the 4 ropes that were used in the Navy at that time. And they all had their different strengths, their different uses. We never used one rope for something else. We always use it for that purpose, whatever purpose it was used for. And the knots and the splices were used for that on those ropes for that purpose as well.
And how did splicing work? I mean, was it easy enough?
I found it very easy. I mean, splicing really is just going, it's like tucking, it's just over one, under one as you lay down the layer of the rope. I mean, splicing is very easy. To me, it is anyway.
Were they doing wire?
I still do it now.
Wire splicing? Because you can splice
wire splice, right? As well, yeah, but that was hard work. But eventually, wire splicing became, not every sailor did wire splicing. On ships that I was on, the wire splicing was done by specialists. They were sailors, but they'd gone into wire splicing for that purpose, to do that and repair wire that had snapped. They could repair it on board instead of, well, they do now, just sort of chuck it ashore and get a new one.
Now, what other seamanship? So that's
there were Morse code we had to learn. Semaphore we had to learn.
Morse seamanship, I'm thinking about. I know about
this is all part. That all came in part of the seamanship. Anchors and cables.
What was anchors and cables?
Anchors and cables were the different anchors that were used for on different ships, because no ship has the same anchor. Not the size of the ships, anyway. The bigger the ship, the bigger the anchor. The cables, which are used for the... we had to learn all about the strengths of cables, how they were made up, how you could break a cable to moor ship. Mooring ship was with 2 anchors down. Then you'd have single anchor. And then you'd be able to come up to buoys, where you had to have a buoy jumper go on to the buoy before the ship got there, and then the ship would steer up to it, and the buoys would be on the to take the cable as it come down to hook it on and get off quick.
Sounds dangerous to me.
Well, it was dangerous in a way, I suppose, but all those things we had to learn.
And what about the rules of the road? I mean, would you actually...
Rules of the road as well. They all came into... We had to do the rules of the road for sailing, rules of the road for navigation. We had to know all the buoyage, you know, all the buoys that are around at sea, who gives way to this and who gives way to that. Everything that comes in the seamanship, really.
And this
navigation we had to learn as well.
Were you given a seamanship manual?
Yes, we had a seamanship manual. I've still got one. We had a seamanship manual, Volume 1 and Volume 2. Volume 2 was the was mainly for manoeuvring purposes, for when you got more advanced into the seamanship, more advanced seamanship, really.
Did you actually have to learn everything?
Oh, yes, everything was in it. Practically everything was in it. I mean, I used to... later on, I was going to use my seamanship thing to great value, but we'll come to that later on.
And you actually... Were you tested on it, or was it just...
Oh, yes, we used to have to have exams, yes. Oh, yes, we didn't do it without having exams.
Now, what about... You mentioned...
Once a month or so, we'd have exams, see how we were progressing.
What about the signalling? You mentioned two aspects. First, Morse. How far did you go with Morse?
I didn't go very far with Morse. I mean, Morse, as far as I was concerned, was for signalmen who ventured from seamanship to qualify for signalmen. I learnt semaphore. I was quite good at. I could do semaphore, but I didn't like Morse.
What didn't you like about it? I just didn't see the point. Found it difficult.
I found it very difficult. I couldn't understand a dot from a dash.
So you didn't really progress
anywhere with that. That didn't make a lot of difference anyway, because it wasn't part of the... That was just something we sort of did as part of our coursework, really.
Now, what about the gunnery training?
The gunnery training. Now, I used to love gunnery training. We used to go into the gunnery training, of course, had rifle drill, which we did an awful lot of.
Tell us about rifle drill. Do you mean rifle training or
rifle
drill?
Rifle training and proper drill. Rifle drill. Which was done by a gunnery instructor. And it was all the sloping arms, ordering arms, fixing bayonets, unfixing bayonets, and whatever else you could think of that you do with a rifle. But we had to learn about a rifle first.
What did you think of drill? I mean, rifle drill. I mean, barracks drill.
At the start, I thought it was... I don't know. I thought it was hard, which was the only thing I can remember. I liked it.
What did you like
about it? I used to like the discipline of it for some reason. I used to like being able to do all this fancy business and all together. I like rifle drill. I like gunnery. I like to learn. We did gunnery on what we called the 6-inch battery, which was learning to handle a big gun, I suppose.
Well, tell us about it. I mean, tell me about this. Do you remember much about the 6-inch gun drill?
Yeah, there were about the drill was sort of opening the breech, loading it up with the projectile and the cordite. Pushing it home with what they call a rammer, closing the breeches and laying and training, and then firing.
And you'd learn every one of those jobs?
We'd learn every one of those jobs. We'd go round, we'd start with, say, number one, and then we'd go round to what was about number six, I suppose. But most of the drill was the same. Whatever it was for the 6-inch gun would be the same with a 15-inch gun. The drill would be the same.
What did you like about it? You just enjoyed it?
I just enjoyed it, yeah. I just liked that sort of thing, I don't know. I just used to take it like duck to water.
Did you learn any of the anti-aircraft guns? I mean, the Bofors, or I'm not sure they had them in there.
Bofors came a little later in the war. This was before the war.
Okay, so then what about actually learning to fire the rifle? I mean, how far did
you... Yes, we went on the firing line. We went to... we used to go to... Tipner in Portsmouth, and we had all the firing. We had with a 303 and a Lewis gun, And we all had to learn to fire these things, and we also had to learn to work the butts where they have the targets.
Well, tell me about firing them first. I mean, were you a good shot? And if
I was.
What made you a good shot on the rifle?
I don't know. Good eyesight, I suppose. But I liked, I did, I became very proficient with a rifle.
And what about the Lewis? What do you think of the Lewis?
The Lewis I didn't like very much because it there was no control of the damn, I couldn't control the damn thing. You know, it would go and I could never really handle that, not the Lewis gun. So I was never going to be a Lewis gunner, that's for sure.
What was the butt drill?
The butt drill was, you'd be down in the butts and you'd hoist the target. They would fire, whoever was firing would fire at it. You'd point to where the shot was, either you had a long pole with a disc on the end, and it was either white or black. And you used to hoist it up. If it was on the white part of the target, then you put the black one on. If it was on the black part of the target, which was the ball, you'd give it a white one, and sort of stick it over the hole. Bring the thing down, and then paste it over with a bit of paper and hoist it back up again.
So the targets were just paper targets, so you could see where the bullet had gone.
Yeah, well, you couldn't see from there, but we used to point to where it was, because we were underneath. We were underneath the thing.
You
out of
could
the way.
See where it was. You could see the hole.
Yeah.
And was there a discipline about that? I presume you had to keep your head.
Yes, because you're under the butts. I mean, it was a big shelter, and it was sand either side of it. So you were down in cement. Underneath cement, I mean, the bullets would go into the sand at the back. You could see the sand, you know, where it was hit at the back. Well, we started on when you finished in the butts, then you went onto the firing range, and you'd start from say 100 yards and walk backwards. You'd fire from positions like the prone position, which was laying down. You'd fire from the sitting position where you sit like this, cross-legged with. You know, the rifle like this sort of thing on your knees, and then you'd have the kneeling position and then the standing up position.
And remember, we're only boys with
big rifles.
Were these very formal positions? Were you sort of had to have it exactly right?
Oh, you had to have it exactly right, otherwise you can't use the rifle. I mean, you have to really know what you're doing. Well, I mean, there's quite a kick in a 303.
Well, they tell you to put it in the shoulder.
And as close to your cheek as possible, but to hold it steady and only squeeze the trigger rather than, you know, to pull it, because you have two pull offs, they call on. You have the first one and then squeeze the second one. But I got quite proficient at that. I could hit a target, and then we used to have to. Another exercise was running from a distance, sort of running down and then falling down with the rifle and firing. You know, be like this, but you can't fire like that, of course.